Before we start today's programme, I want to invite you to join me for Open the Bible in a Day, a special online event on Saturday, October the 16th. We're going to travel through the whole Bible story in just 3 hours. In the Old Testament, we're going to meet 5 people. In the Gospels, we'll focus on 5 events in the life of Jesus. And in the New Testament letters, we'll discover 5 gifts that belong to every Christian believer. For more information and to sign up, visit us at unlockingthebible.org.
If therefore there is no glimpse of God's holiness in what we do together, if there is no grasp of God's truth, if there is no vision of God's beauty, no experience of His love, no declaration of His purpose, if these things are not part of our worship, then whatever takes place on a Sunday morning is not worship as the Scriptures commend it to us.
Welcome to Unlocking the Bible with Pastor Colin Smith. I'm Steve Hiller, and glad you're with us today as we begin a new series taking a look at worship. And today, we're going to see what worship truly is, how it has to be God-centered. We're going to spend a little time today looking at some of the elements of public worship and how we can grow in areas of discernment. So I hope that you will stay with us. As we begin this series, we're going to open our Bibles to the book of Romans chapter 11. And today we're going to be focusing on verses 33 to 36. So if you don't have a Bible handy, I hope you'll grab one and join us there. As we begin our message, here is Pastor Colin.
Been looking forward for some time to our new series entitled Worship, What We Do and Why We Do It. Our focus is going to be on the elements of worship, hence the title, What We Do and Why We Do It. We're going to be asking some fundamental questions. Why do we sing? Why do we give? Why do we pray? Why do we have the Lord's Supper? What's it all about? These are going to be the questions that we're dealing with together. After we've laid the foundation over the first 3 weeks, I would like to open up a discussion throughout the congregation, and particularly with parents of younger children, as to how we can help children engage with each of these elements of worship. I think this will be a very profitable discussion for us, in which we're able to help one another. How do we help our children in singing and praying? How do we help our children to relate to the elements of worship? It's an important part of what it means to pass on the truth of God from one generation to another, and to help younger people in the process of spiritual formation as they grow up within the family of God. So that's what's lying ahead of us over these next weeks together. My great desire is that all of us, in thinking about this subject from the Scriptures, will be able to enter more fully into what it means to worship God in this coming year. And if we're to enter into it more fully, we need to understand what it is that we're trying to do and why it is that we're trying to do it. Now, just so that you know that I wasn't born on another planet or whatever, I am aware that preaching on worship today is like taking a walk through a minefield. Just so you know, I know that. In fact, it's hard to think of a subject that has been more difficult and, frankly, sometimes more divisive for churches than this. And one of the reasons, of course, is that a great deal of the discussion, whenever the subject of worship comes up, is often about matters of taste and of style. In other words, it's about organs or guitars, it's about new songs or old hymns, it's about dressing up or dressing down, it's about standing up or sitting down or whatever else. And quite frankly, if you take anywhere in the world a random selection of 100 Christians and ask them to discuss these issues, you will find that there is a wide diversity of opinion. So long, therefore, as the discussion in any church is on matters of taste and style, it is very unlikely that there will ever be agreement. There might be some consensus that is achieved, but not agreement. Now, before we get too upset about that, let's remember that it is precisely the same when it comes to cars. If you take a random selection of 100 Christians and ask them to sit down and talk about cars, you will find the same diversity of strongly held opinions over matters of taste and of style. One person will say, I would never go past a Buick. In fact, if the 100 were taken from this congregation, it would be a lot more than one person would say, I'd never go past a Buick. But then someone else would say, hey, Buicks don't do anything for me. I wouldn't thank you for one, but I would never part with my Jeep Cherokee. And then someone else who's into a different approach of life will say, hey, I wouldn't be seen dead in a Jeep Cherokee, but I would go for a Dodge Viper. Now, we have these different brands of cars, and they all represent different tastes and different styles. We have very strong opinions about them, actually. We get attached to them emotionally. We have deep feelings about them. I'll probably get some letters from Lexus owners complaining that they felt left out and that I chose the wrong selection. Now, if our discussion of worship revolves around questions of taste and style, there will be no more agreement than we would expect to get in a discussion over the choice of a car. And on that approach, all that you end up doing, you see, is taking opinion polls, which is, of course, what they do in the car industry. The polls tell you what is the best-selling car. They tell you what people are buying today, which, of course, is very different from what they will be buying tomorrow. Now, I don't think that the subject of worship should be approached in that way at all. I don't think that we should start from the question, what are people buying today? That's entirely the wrong way to approach such a subject as this. And so I want us to take an entirely different approach. Think about it this way. You can buy a shiny new Buick. You can buy a Jeep Cherokee, or you can have a Dodge Viper. But if your Buick doesn't have a battery, if your Jeep Cherokee doesn't have a transmission, if your Dodge Viper does not have pistons in the engine, you are going nowhere fast. Now, this series is therefore not going to be about what is the sleekest, coolest, most popular way to do worship. This series is going to be about what makes worship work. In other words, this is going to be like a kind of auto shop on worship. We're going to open up the parts that make it function. Our focus is going to be on the elements of public worship, what we do and why we do it. Now, most of you already know that as God is drawing more and more people to our church, we are planning to launch two additional services in September of this year. The music will be of a different style from what we normally do in the sanctuary here, but the values will be precisely the same. In other words, to use this analogy, it will be a different look and feel of car, but it will have all the same working parts, and it will be traveling on the same road. And if you look at the message titles of this series, you will see what that road is and where we are going together. It is the same road on which we have been traveling and from which we are not deviating. We are going to pursue worship that is God-centered, Christ-focused, Spirit-filled, singing, praying, giving, preaching, as we celebrate the gifts of baptism and the Lord's Supper together. These are the things that really matter. These are the things that we do. And I want us to understand why we do them. That's our focus. Secondly, our aim, by way of introduction. One aim is that when we talk about worship, that we'll be able to talk about it in an informed and considered way. You know, God's people should be able to talk about worship in a considered way, in an intelligent way. I want us to understand clearly why discussions about I like this and she likes that are really of very limited value and significance when it comes to worship. I want us as a congregation to grow in the area of discernment. A sleek car with no battery takes you no place fast. And the most important questions to ask about a church's worship are not about the attractions of its style. They are about whether it has the component parts that will take you where you need to go. Thirdly, by way of introduction, a word about our approach. Two words to be precise. The first is conviction. You see, while God has given us wonderful freedom in how we do things, He has also given us clear instruction about what we are to do. There are certain things that God has called us to do, and they're not up for discussion or negotiation. We are called to pray. That's the calling of the church. We are called to read and to explain the scriptures. We are called to celebrate the Lord's Supper. These are the things that God has told us to do. They are the givens of worship. Now, there may be some folks who have the idea that we do what we do because we haven't thought about it. I want you to know that we do what we do because we have thought about it and will continue to do so. And from time to time, you know, it's a useful thing within the context of the church family to explain what we do and why we do it. And that is especially important as we seek to communicate the faith from one generation to another. Secondly, humility. I want you to understand as I speak that none of us who are trusted with the responsibility of leadership in these things feels that we've got it all sewn up or that we've got it all right. One of my prayers for this series is that in thinking through what we're called to do together, we may be able to enter more fully into what God has called us to do as we engage ourselves fully in the worship of Him.
You're listening to Unlocking the Bible with Pastor Colin Smith, a message called God-Centered, as we begin a series all about worship. Really, we've been looking at the introduction of the series so far, and as we get back to the message in just a moment, we're going to take a look at the definition of worship. But if you ever want to make sure that you don't miss a future broadcast of Unlocking the Bible, you can always come to our website and you can sign up to begin podcasting the program. You can also listen on the go if you have the Unlocking the Bible app. You'll find it at your favorite app store, or we'll link you to it through our website, unlockingthebible.org. All right, let's get back to the message. Again, here is Pastor Colin.
Let's plunge into our subject, and perhaps the best place to begin is simply with a definition. And the finest definition that I've ever come across of Christian worship was given many years ago by Archbishop William Temple. This is what he said. Worship is the submission of our whole nature to God, the quickening of conscience by His holiness, the nourishment of mind by His truth, the purifying of imagination by His beauty, the opening of heart to His love, the submission of will to His purpose. In other words, true worship takes place when all that we are is fully engaged with all that God is. That's why the starting place in any serious consideration of worship has to be with God Himself. For from Him and through Him and to Him are all things. If therefore there is no glimpse of God's holiness in what we do together, if there is no grasp of God's truth, if there is no vision of God's beauty, no experience of His love, no declaration of His purpose, if these things are not part of our worship, then whatever takes place on a Sunday morning is not worship, as the Scriptures commend it to us. I was raised in a Baptist church in Scotland, but I always admired the way that the Presbyterians began their services of worship with four words, and it was always the same. Let us worship God. You can't get a better start than that. Let us worship God. That is the finest statement of purpose that you could have for a gathering together such as this. God is to be at the center of this hour. We are gathering together to Him. Every part of the service is a means to draw us in all that we are towards Him, that He may be brought into view, that we may fill our whole horizon with all that He is. We are to sing to Him and about Him. We are to give to Him and for His work. We are to pray to Him. We are to listen to Him speaking in His Word, which is the Scripture. We are invited to share communion with Him. We are to make Him the center of our whole attention. Now, you see, if we have really worshipped, We will not go home saying, hey, wasn't the worship great? We'll go home saying, hey, isn't God great? And if we go home saying, hey, isn't the worship great? Then we've actually put the worship in the place of God. And that's idolatry. And it's a very subtle temptation. Just as in our private lives, we set aside some time for undivided prayer and attention to God in His Word, so we set aside together this hour in the week. It's not everything we do in the life of the church, but this hour we focus our whole attention on Him. Now, what does it mean then for us to be truly God-centered? Three things. First, being God-centered means hungering and thirsting after God. Now, I've been challenged and greatly helped by a question framed by John Piper. I've adapted it just slightly, and here it is. If you could have a happy marriage, healthy children, a successful career, good friends, fun vacations, a comfortable retirement, a painless death, and no hell, would you be satisfied? If you could have all these good things, you could pass through death relatively without pain, and you could escape hell, if you could have all these things, but only these things, would you be satisfied? Now, there's something deep within the soul of every Christian believer that will cry out in response to that, no, I must have God. Not just what God can give me, but there is within my soul a hungering, a thirsting, a longing after God. A.W. Tozer warned some years ago about the kind of religion, he said, in which Christ could be received without creating any special love for him in the soul of the receiver. That a person would think him or herself saved and yet have no hunger or thirst after God. That's one of the greatest dangers in modern evangelicalism. That we have this kind of cool transaction in which we decide that we're all now going to go to heaven and yet have no passion within our souls that hungers and thirsts after God. Now think about that. Think about the analogy of marriage. A person can marry for different reasons. A person can marry for love. A person can marry for money. We celebrate a person who marries for love. We tend to despise a person who marries for money. But when you think about our relationship with Jesus Christ, how many times have you heard a testimony that was basically like this? Well, I came to Jesus Christ because I didn't want to go to hell. Is that it? How do you think God feels about that? Suppose your wife, married men, was asked why she married you. And she said, well, the main reason was I wanted to get away from my parents. Couldn't stand them. He offered me a ticket out of a place I didn't want to be, so I took it. Suppose your husband, married ladies, was asked why he married you, and he said, hey, the main reason was I had a load of debts after college. And she had some money. I couldn't think of any other way of paying off the debts, and so I decided to marry her. Yet, is that not precisely how we so often express our reasons for coming to Christ? He pays my debts. He gets me out of hell. Now, if that is all your religion is, how do you think God feels about that? That's the question again. If you could have a happy marriage, a healthy children, successful career, good friends, fun vacations, a comfortable retirement, a painless death, and no hell, would you be satisfied? If you could be satisfied with that, you have not tasted and seen that God is good. The psalmist writes, "As a deer pants for streams of water, so my soul longs for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God. When can I go to meet with God?" And every true believer knows what he was talking about. The first sign of genuine new birth and spiritual life in the soul is that you have a love, a taste, a hunger for God. Second, being God-centered means loving God for who he is. See, worship is an overflow of our joy and our delight in God. I don't think anyone has expressed this better, to my knowledge, than C.S. Lewis. He writes these words: "All enjoyment spontaneously overflows into praise. The world," he says, "rings with praise. Lovers praising their mistresses. Readers their favorite poet. Walkers praising the countryside. Players praising their favorite game. Praise of weather, wines, dishes, actors, motors, horses, colleges, countries, historical personages, children, flowers, mountains, rare stamps, rare beetles." I've never heard that one, but... "Sometimes even politicians and scholars." He puts them after rare beetles, apparently. And then he says, "As men spontaneously praise, so they urge us to join them in their praising whatever they value. Isn't she lovely? Wasn't it glorious? Don't you think it magnificent?" Now, isn't that true? The fascinating thing about any delight is that the instinctive desire is to share that delight with someone else who will appreciate it. So what's the first thing you think when you hear a really good joke? You think, "Oh, I can't wait to tell him or her." You think of someone who'll really appreciate it. You say, "Oh, I can't wait to tell him." You read a really good book. You say, "Oh, I must tell my friend about this book." You see a great film. You go to someone else and say, "Oh, you've got to see it. You'll love it." Now, you see, that is the great privilege of worship together, that when we have discovered a delight in God, there is a joy in finding other people who share that delight. Come, let us magnify the Lord. Let us exalt his name together. For we share a delight in who he is, a love, and our worship is an overflow of that discovery.
You're listening to Unlocking the Bible with Pastor Colin Smith, the first message in a series all about worship and taking a look today at why worship must be God-centered. We're going to continue this message next time, so I do hope you make it a point to tune in. By the way, if you ever miss a broadcast in our series, you can always come and listen to each and every program online. Just stop by unlockingthebible.org. And as you give a gift of any amount this month, we want to say thank you by giving you a copy of a classic book. It's written by J.I. Packer. It's called Knowing God. And Colin, why is Knowing God a must-read book?
Well, Steve, I think you already said it. It is a classic book. J.I. Packer's Knowing God has helped people for many, many years. But I got to speak about it personally. This is one of the books that has really been life-shaping for me. I go back to it again and again because it takes us through the very heart of who God is, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And he writes in such a beautifully concise, profound, insightful, wise, uplifting way. This is not a book, by the way, to try and read, you know, sort of 25 pages at a time. I just read 3 or 4 pages because it's so rich. It's like eating a marvelously rich steak. But it's, oh, this builds muscle in Christian faith. Knowing God is at the very heart of faith. As you come to know who God is, your faith in him is going to grow. So I'm just thrilled to be able to put a book that has been life-shaping for me and for many others into the hands of those who listen to Unlocking the Bible. If you've not read Knowing God by J.I. Packer, you've got to have and you've got to read this book.
Well, we would love to send you a copy of the book as you give a gift of any amount this month. You can find out more, give online at unlockingthebible.org or call us at 1-866-UNLOCKED. That's 1-866-865-6253. Or again, our website is unlockingthebible.org. Well, thanks for listening today, and I hope you'll join us next time. This program is a listener-supported production of Unlocking the Bible. If you could have a great marriage, successful kids, a rewarding career, good friends, and no hell, would you be satisfied? Find out on the next Unlocking the Bible.